Hello, Yes But Why listeners. This is your host, Amy Jordan. Welcome to Yes But Why episode 305, my conversation with Omaha improv leader, Dylan Oakes Rohde. But first, let's talk about our sponsors. Yes But Why podcast is sponsored by Audible. Sign up today for your 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy. I want to thank those of you that are actually listening to me because I was checking my stats recently and a few people are listening through Audible. So thank you so much for, you know, using the service and like checking it out. Audible is very helpful, not only for podcasts like me, but also for cool new books and even old books. If you're like, oh, everyone's talking about this book, I didn't read it in high school. Hey, someone will read it to you. You should check it out. Okay. It's an amazing service. There's lots for you to go through. You don't even have to buy a single thing other than just signing up to actually get some amazing stuff. So go now to audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy, sign up and get your account today. Yes But Why podcast is also brought to you by podcastcadet.com. Podcastcadet.com is the company that my husband Chris and I run to help podcasters. It is a website we are putting together with small videos and just links to things so that if you're a podcaster starting out, we can help you by putting out the information that we know. And every time we learn something new, you know, we want to help other people. So whatever you need for your podcast, just contact us and we can help you. Chris has also been making custom computers for people as well. And that's really helpful to podcasters to have the equipment that they really need to create the show that they want. So let us help you get started with your new podcast or improve the podcast you're working on right now. Check out our website, see what's available there for free. But if you end up buying a service, just mention code YBY20 and you'll get 20% off. We want to help you. Podcastcadet.com. This week on Yes But Why, I chat with Dylan Oakes Rohde, founder of the Backline Comedy Theater in Omaha, Nebraska. Listen in as Dylan tells me how a writing competition and some basic knowledge of video editing kickstarted his improv career. We had lots and lots of laughs in this episode. You will too. I now present to you Yes But Why, episode 305, Dylan Oakes Rohde and the surprising road to building an improv community. Enjoy. I'm Amy Jordan, and this is
Yes But Why.
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 This is the Yes But Why podcast.
Yeah, so I was like, hey, you should teach a class. And since I don't know music that well, I was like, I'm going to also be in that class.
Yeah. You don't know music so well. I don't know. I got a very guy in a band vibe from you when I started talking to you.
I'm trying to learn it. I like hip hop a lot. And
yeah, that's it. That's it. Because you told me earlier you wanted to add the hip hop. So I was like, oh, okay. He does. He's a performer. Yeah. This is what he does. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it. I also love the beauty of the bravery of an improviser. Who's all like, yeah, I've never done it before, but I'll do it. Sure. And you're like, yes. Like, that's my kind of guy. That's right. You know? Oh, fun. All right. So let's jump in. What was the way in which you played as a kid? What were the games you were playing? Do you have siblings? Stuff like that.
The funny thing is, I don't remember a whole lot about my childhood.
Blocked it out. Mostly, that makes sense.
Yeah. And I don't know if I've just done too much as an adult to remember. But most of the stuff I hear is like from my sister and cousins. And they're like, this is what you were like.
Except I have the same.
I know I was very mischievous. I would test the limits and like see what I could get away with. And like, I really loved to kind of fuck around and like just get in trouble. That was a lot of the fun.
Yeah. Do you have an idea of like what you thought of your own childhood, or rather, I guess some people I really connect with their childhood because they feel young. You know what I mean? Like they're like, I always felt like I was 8, or in my case, I was 36 when I was 6. Like I would walk around my mom's parties. And again, this is a story told to me, not that I remember. That I would walk around the party like I was an adult with them and entertain. Like I'd go from group to group and tell them a story and then laugh and walk away. And they were like, what is happening right now? But I really thought I was, you know, I was one of the adults and I'm just at this cocktail party and they just let me. So it was fine. But yeah, you were mischievous. Were you then, instead of walking around and being with the adults, were you like, you know, going and grabbing cigarettes out of purses and smoking outside, or what do you think?
I didn't smoke cigarettes till I was like 17. I used to actually hate them because sure. My mom smoked and I didn't like smoke. So beyond that, I did, however, like fire. I one time wrote my name in gasoline on a gravel driveway and then lit it on fire. I just had like a little tank of gasoline. So I just wrote my name and then lit it on fire.
My God. Did you get in so much trouble or?
No, I never got caught on that one.
Oh, wow. Good one. Hope you don't tell your mom to listen. She would don't tell her to listen.
I did accidentally set my uncle's farm on fire once, like a small part of it. I was flicking matches like an idiot and, not really thinking that, oh, I'm in a dry field of tall grass up to my face. And, you know, there's like a heavy wind. And I was just thinking it looked cool to see the matches like fly in the air as they're on fire and then go out. And my cousin at one point turns around and just yells and starts stomping. And we turn around. And there's a fire like the size of a car. And so we all ran over and started putting it out. And my uncle comes up with a four-wheeler and a huge tank of water and has to put it out. And we got very lucky that it did not spread.
Oh, my God. What did your uncle say? Did you get in so much trouble?
Much trouble. I had just gotten in trouble in the reunion the year before. So at that point, I kind of felt like I was the family mess up, fuck up. Can I say? I can
sure,
say.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because I'd broken a window at a cabin the year before, and that was like made my grandparents disappointed in me, you know, kind of stuff. So then to do this next year, I was like, oh, they all hate me.
Oh, man. Oh, that's rough. That's rough. I totally feel that. And I almost appreciate you telling me that story because I'm like, yeah, my kid's going to do that. So I should make sure he knows that I like him all the time. So that's good. No, you're helping my parenting. You really are. Because I was like, yeah, my kid's going to do this. All the stories you're telling, I'm like, break a window in a cabin? Oh, for sure. Yeah. Like we might as well just, if we rent a cabin somewhere, just bring an extra window, just like swing by Home Depot first.
Well, I even was like, I was one of the older cousins. So I was telling the younger cousins not to mess with the window because it'll break. And I was like, don't do this. And I'd tap on it. And then I was like, definitely don't do this. And I hit it with a broom and it just.
Those younger cousins never touched a window ever, though. Like they were like, seriously, it just breaks. Like you look at it, you're like cousin Dylan, like just looked at it and the whole thing broke. And then grandma was so mad. Like I don't even open windows. They're all living in like closed windows homes right now. Like yeah. They won't open them.
Oh, it's so hot.
They painted them just shut because they're like, listen, I'm not getting involved with that. Oh man, that's wild. So you're the bad kid. You're the bad seed. You're the bad seed. So like, was that continuously the vibe? Like, did you continue to burn things and, you know, set off fireworks and do wild things? / did you also feel like your family looked at you that way? Like pre-college?
It sort of depended on like where I was at. 'Cause I, this was all, let's see here. A lot of it was after, like, a divorce of my parents. So, like, it was sort of my, that phase as a kid, you know, like, I'm going to do fucked up shit, right?
React.
So I would sort of bounce between that. And then if I went to a new school, sometimes I'd be real quiet. There was a time when I lived in Las Vegas, I think it was. Arizona. I lived in Arizona. And I had just moved a couple of times and I was like, I'm sick of making new friends and then moving again. So I was just like, I'm not going to bother. And I didn't talk to anybody. I didn't say anything to anyone at all the whole time I was there. Except a movie came out around that time called Ace Ventura. And I loved it. And I would walk around the halls just going, all righty then.
So you were that guy till you moved away, and then
I had to have been the biggest dork. Yeah.
Oh wow. How long did you live there? Like, how long did you maintain this I don't talk unless I'm quoting Ace Ventura situation?
I only went there one semester and then I moved again. Wow. So wow. Yeah.
If you're listening to this right now and you went to school and you remember that, let us know.
Yeah,
if you're like an Arizona improviser, Arizona. And you're like, oh my god, this is the guy.
I had they would have remembered me by wearing orange swim trunks to class every day, and instead of regular shoes, I had water socks. If you know those, yeah, it was Arizona, but that was pretty ridiculous. I used to also wear this giant Boss. It was a purple Boss t-shirt that was so big, it went down past my swim trunks anyways.
I love this, like, oh man, I can't imagine what it's like to move around a bunch, right? And then to have to make new friends. But I really appreciate this one moment of you just saying, fuck it. You're like, listen, I'm not doing this again. I have done it, checked it off the list, no longer ready to do this situation. And you were just like, guess who I am? The weird kid. I like it. Because don't get me wrong, like, I dressed wild. I was fully an 80s kid and I wore crazy mismatch patterns. It would be very hip today. But I wore crazy clothes. When I went to college, my girlfriends were like, okay, the first thing we're going to do is stop this. Whatever's happened, I don't know why you're putting these together. This is not the way people dress. So let us help you, right? And these girls that I was living in the dorm with, like redressed me and like changed the way. They were like, no, no, no. Like before we'd go out, they'd be like, Amy, there's too many colors in this outfit. We need to pick one color. We need to go with it across the board, okay? You want to go orange? Great. Have a great time. Orange all the way. But this, there's a lot. It's too much. So, like, I feel you on some wild fashion when you're, like, figuring out who you are.
Oh, my first like, night in Hollywood, when I moved to Hollywood as an adult, I had this, a friend who lived out there had another friend. And she's like, we're going to go out tonight. And so me and my other friends, we all went out. She's like, I'm going to get you a new style. You can't be dressing like you're from Nebraska. And so she buys me all these clothes for one outfit. I used to spend, you know, the smallest amount on clothes anyways. So I ended up spending like $250 on this one outfit. And I'm like already like, but the stuff she was picking out was like I was someone from, I'd say, like, Eastern Europe, who was ready to go out to a party, like a dance club, you know, and like this black pinstripe kind of shirt that's like almost see-through, and like, it's not, I don't know what fabric it was made, but it was very almost ruffly throughout, super tight black jeans, which I hated black jeans, super tight black jeans, and some black Chucks, which were like, I've never been a fan of them. They don't fit my feet right. Like, I don't like them. My friends were all like, dude, you're not in Nebraska anymore. You got to dress like this. And I was like, well, I guess. I wore that outfit like twice. That one night and then like one other try. I was like, let's try this again. No, I still feel stupid in this outfit.
Oh my God. Oh God. That's so funny, man. First of all, let's just reflect that our friends try to change our clothes. Like, leave your friends alone, everybody. But like, so you said when you moved to Hollywood as an adult, what's adult? How old were you when you moved there?
22.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to be like 18. I was like, all right. Like, I'll allow it, but no. Yeah. 22. Yeah. Right on. Wow. So like, was that like straight out of college? You were just like, all right, I finished college. Check. I spent four years in one location. Not into it. Thought I wanted to stay in one place. Do not want to stay in one place. So let's move again. And you went to, you apparently got over the hump of moving and then you went to LA. But people were there, it sounds like. You had friends that were already there. So there was a buffer?
A little bit. I knew one person and then I moved out there. I had one friend drive out there with me. So I had two friends that night and then one flew back. But.
Oh. Yeah. And then you moved there with the hopes of becoming an actor or no? Because if I remember from my research of you, you started out video editing. Is that correct?
Sure. Well, so it kind of bounced around a little bit. When I was in high school, I knew I wanted to move out to Hollywood and try to be an actor someday. I actually told this to my high school teacher, like during creative writing. And he's like, then why aren't you in plays? And I was like, cause it's high school. And he's like, yeah, but you should still do plays. And I'm like, yeah, okay, fair enough. So then I started doing plays.
Drama teachers, don't forget. Sometimes you have to go, why are you in plays? And it works.
Yeah. Do it. Yeah. So then I went to college for theater. When I moved out to there, I also started to write at this point, got really into writing. And I thought either I was going to get into film either through writing or acting. I didn't really know which path I was really going to end up at that point. But I submitted my first screenplay for the Nichols Fellowship, which is like a pretty big one. It's like $500,000. And I didn't get it, so I gave up writing for a while.
Isn't the Nichols Fellowship the group that runs the Oscars? Is that right?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so this is not like, you know, like some small town. Yeah. You're like, listen, I'm going to apply to one thing, and when I don't get an Oscar, I'm out.
Yeah, my first try, my first script didn't get in.
Oh, man, that's a rough one, though. That's right. I bet you thousands, millions even do just that. They try once, they do something, and then they shoot for the moon. And then when it doesn't work out, they're like, oh, well, I guess it mustn't be meant to be. It's like, what? You know, there's 1,000 festivals, you know, there's a million writing contests you can submit to that are like not that high up, you know. I bet you Nichols Fellowships only go to like people who've already made movies that have been in the movie theater. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
man.
They didn't even read mine. They're like, nothing. This kid's in college. Get out of here. Yeah.
They're like, where's the resume? They're like, this is the resume. Oh, the story is. No. That being said, like, who knows who reads these things? Like, you know what I mean? Like here in Austin, there's a whole crew of people that like volunteer to read all of the submissions for the things. It's like, are you kidding me right now? Like hundreds of them. You know what I mean? Like not two guys in a room or whatever. Like any indication of like a continued sense of what is good and bad? No, it's just random, right? Oh, man. So how'd you get up off that horse? Like what happened? You fell down and you were like, forget it. I quit. What'd you do?
So, I had gotten my rejection letter like right before I moved to Hollywood. So I was like, well, I guess I better focus on the acting part. So, I went there and I didn't really, I mean, my college didn't prepare me at all for anything Hollywood related.
I've talked to a lot of people and I don't think any of them did. I don't think there's a college out there that's really given anybody a true sense of like what to expect in the real world of film and television, for sure. Maybe the ones in LA, but yeah, I mean, across the board, people are not getting educations from liberal arts colleges that like prepare them. What are the things that were new to you that you felt like, I wish someone told me about this before?
Sure. Well, I didn't know anything about having an agent or a manager, for the most part, people don't really get a manager right away, especially if you don't know what you're doing, but you do get an agent and it's usually someone really shitty because you're just starting off. So I had a pretty shitty agent at first. And then I got a slightly better shitty agent after a little bit. I never really got a good one. but I spent my first 2 years not knowing what to do. So I would look in like newspaper. It was like a theater news or a film newspaper or something. I don't remember what it was called. There was also like Backstage West, which was another nicer magazine of that. But I'd look for auditions and things where, you know, everyone else in Hollywood is looking at and like looking on, I think they had Craigslist back then, or I was using something online.
I was like, I thought you were much younger than me. And yet you're talking about this paper. I'm like, what do you know of paper, young man? What do you mean magazines? Tell me about these magazines.
This is back when I lived in Hollywood before having GPS, at least myself having GPS, and I had to have the old 200-page map of Los Angeles that everyone.
Yeah, that's classic. Yeah. I hear older than me actors talking about that all the time. That's why I was just like, wait, how do you know they didn't have don't have like a phone? Oh wow.
When I moved out there, I studied a map of Los Angeles, so if I ever got lost, I'd like could figure out how to get back.
Oh my God. I could hug baby you. That's the sweetest. That's the best. Good for you. It's tough out there. It is a wild, it is not an organized place, right? It's like New York City. You can figure it out. You just swing over and say like, if I can figure out which way is north, I can figure out which way to go. So, you know, it's easy, right? But yeah, certain places, certain cities, you're like, what is that? What? Is this a different place? I have no idea where I am now. Yeah. And LA's got a lot of different personalities.
Yeah. And so my first 2 years were like auditioning for student films at USC and UCLA, which I got some help out of. Like, I got a little bit of an education from there without ever having to pay for it. So that was cool.
Awesome.
Cause like the instructor would be there during the filming and like, he'd give advice and stuff like that.
Good. Way to go listening.
Yes. So I did a handful, but you're always doing like movies that someone else has done and you're playing a role that you're like, I'll never get this in real life. I'm 22 and I'm playing an 80-year-old man because it's a student film, you know? So I was like, this isn't helping anything. This isn't going anywhere. I usually didn't even get the footage because they wouldn't like end up like sending it to anything, you know, like you wouldn't get it. So
I've done professional things where I've never seen the thing at the end. I have done things where I've been paid a lot of money and I'm like, where is this foot? No one has it. It's not available. It's not a thing. It didn't become a thing at all. I was like, okay, great, whatever. So don't worry. These student films.
Yeah. Well, so then I was starting to be like, what am I doing here in Hollywood? And like, what is any of this? And I was like, I got to figure out something else. I can't just be another of the thousands of actors that are doing nothing out here. So I was just getting into video editing because I didn't really do much of it in college. I did a little bit, but I had a roommate who had Final Cut Pro, which was a pretty good editing software. And so I didn't really have anything else to do with my time. So I was just sitting there on his computer, like editing for hours, and I'd make like these really weird things as I was like learning different stuff. I was like learning filters, and I'd incorporate it into my video. And if you watch it, you're like, this person was just too fucking high, you know, because it's really weird. But it was a nice way for me to figure out what things did. And then I wanted to start making my own projects. And I'm like, well, I don't even know how to do that. I don't have cameras. You know, and at that point, phone cameras were nothing. They were like a picture that was like 640 by 480. It was very grainy. And like, I had saw that demo reels were things that people like paid for, and they were very simple. And I was like, I could do a demo reel. It's just, you just cut around the sides basically and put some sort of transition between each thing. And I was like, I can do that. But I didn't know anybody who had good enough footage to do anything with. The barely shit that I was in that I did have footage of and stuff wasn't good. And I didn't know anybody who had good footage. And so me and my friend were going to start this business. I reached out, I had MySpace at the time, and there was this theater called the Upright Citizens Brigade, who I just added. I just added because they were like in my suggested whatever. And I was like, oh, that's the place that's like down the street from me. I know that place. Never knowing like what it was or what they did. And so I added them and I sent a message that said, hey, not sure if anyone there has any good footage to use, but I'm looking to edit a demo reel to start my business. And if anyone wants one for free, I'll do it for free if you've got anything that I can use. And so I got a response from Matt Besser, one of the founders of UCB, who's like, yes, I'd love for you to do my demo reel. And you can even do my wife's if you want, or my fiance's if you want, which is Danielle Schneider. They weren't married at the time, but I was like, sure, that's awesome. I don't really know who this guy is, because I didn't know anything about the sketch show at the time or anything. And I looked him up and I saw that he was on like, I think he was in like an episode of Reno 911 or something like that. And that was about all he had of like stuff that I was familiar with. And so I show up and he's like, come to my theater. You can watch a show and I'll give you the clips. And I'm like, cool, great.
So forces you into being in the audience. They're like, listen, bodies and seats, get in there. If you watch it, then I'll give you my stuff.
Sure. Well, I mean, it was also their show ASCAT, which is like their main show that fills up. So he wasn't worried about, I don't think, filling seats for that show. But
I thought maybe it was early, and they're just like trying to. They're like, have you heard about us? We're like new. Like, we were in New York, but now we're here. Hey, what's up?
Yeah. No, they were already getting, that show was already getting like a full line around the block for that.
Right on.
But
I would wait in a line around the block for that. I know we talked about not wanting to wait in lines earlier. Just wanted to throw that out there. That like, okay, but I would wait in the line. I wait in a long line for improv. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I'll give you that.
So I watched the show and I remember he said something that made me go, oh, hell yeah. they were doing this show and he goes, look, I can say anything I want up here. He goes, I can say whatever I want. And he goes, I can say cunt AIDS if I want. And I was like, oh shit, he can say the word cunt and AIDS? Wow.
AIDS.
Wow. Just in front of an audience, he can say that. And I was like, that's so cool. I was just blown away that someone could say that in front of an audience. Cause like between movies and TV and like certainly live theater, you can't just get in front of people and say cunt AIDS back then. Mm-hmm. And I was blown away that he could. Of course, that became like the UCB motto, I think, being able to say cunt AIDS. it was like, at least my experience was like, how offensive can we be?
Totally.
Yeah. So
I feel like there's still people in comedy who thinks like that's the top. Like if I can say the most offensive thing, I've got it. And you're like, all right, well, I mean, there's a lot more nuance to it, but sure. Yeah.
I used to start off like trying to tell the most offensive dick joke, but now I just try to soften the blowjob. All right. That's about it.
Well, yeah, it's all right. It still works. Still works. We got a good laugh out of that one. So,
yeah.
You know.
So we edit this demo reel. And like I said, I was doing a lot of like super weird stuff. So I get this footage and he didn't tell us what he wanted. He just goes, why don't you watch it on and pick whatever you like? So we had to watch two seasons of The President's Brigade and like these movies that I never heard of. And, so we finally get everything down to like, you know, 5 minutes of stuff, but I pulled my favorite lines from everything and I just mashed up all my favorite lines. And, he watches it and he's like, what the hell is this? This isn't a demo reel. He goes, you got to have people acting with me. You can't just have my lines. You've got to show how I'm with people. And we're like, oh, okay. So can we do it again? He's like, yeah, just do it again. So we then take,
I mean, like, you were honest that you needed someone to like give you stuff so you could learn. So Hopefully he was easygoing and not mean about it.
A little bit of both. But I'm sure if anyone knows best, so they know he's a little rough.
A little rough around the edges. Yeah, I hear that. Yeah.
So we do this other one and we take these clips that we liked and he comes over to watch it again. And, you know, because back then it was easier to have someone come over than just upload it. So he comes over to watch it and he did not like our choices of scenes that we picked. So we're like, just tell us the scenes you want and we'll put them in there. I remember once he goes like something like, this isn't funny, you know, or something like that. And I'm like, well, I don't know, dude. So we finally got it. He finally got the one that he wanted. And he's like, yes, I like this. Which is good. And then we ended up getting Matt Walsh's demo reel shortly after that. One of the other founders, which there was like a little confusion because he like comes over and he gives us, before he came over, we were like, you know, he's like, is it still free or whatever? And we're like, well, we're thinking about charging, you know, because I didn't really know. Like looking back, I would have definitely just said, yeah, dude, free for you, of course. But I still didn't really know how things worked and like who he was really, because I was just getting into classes. And so we're like, it was free, maybe not anymore, you know. And he goes, I'll bring you a gift. And so he brings this box that's wrapped with weed in it. And we're like, oh, that's cool. But then we were also like, we were poor. So we're like, so what about like $100? And to be honest, I can't remember if he paid us or if we ended up just feeling really bad that we asked and we dropped it. But for some reason, I can't remember what ended up happening, but I do remember that I felt really bad asking him for $100.
I see that you've blocked it out. You've definitely, it'll come out with hypnosis, but don't worry about it. You don't need to know. It doesn't matter.
but I did still really appreciate him giving us a little box, a gift wrap box of weed.
Gift wrapped. Yeah. I love it. So fancy.
Yeah. A little bow on top. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Very good. Very good. So did you do, did this demo reel business like take off for you, or did you decide like, yeah, this isn't really what we want to do, and you focused on classes at UCB?
Well, We were having a hard time getting anyone to pay us for demo reels. Everyone wanted free ones, but no one really wanted to pay.
Oh, like, my God. Story of our lives. Am I right? I feel like you that you could open that phrase with every story you tell me. You're like, well, I started this theater and we really wanted people to pay us, but people hate that for some reason. Like, I yeah. know, man.
We got a few. We got a few where people would pay like 100 or 150 bucks and we'd edit it, and most of the time people would like it, but sometimes they wouldn't. But we did a few, and then sometimes, you know, as we got more into improv, we were liking it more for like the connection. So we did Billy Merritt's demo reel for 3 practice sessions, you know, which at the time
that's
was
good. Like, that's
yeah,
that's almost 100 bucks.
Like, yeah, well, it's more than that with 3 sessions because it was like 60, 70 bucks a session.
Oh, yeah.
Stream. So it was actually a pretty good deal.
Yeah. Now you're really making money.
Yeah. So, so we did Matt Walsh's and Billy Merritt's. We did a few folks. We almost did Paul Shear's, but I was like maybe an hour too late to respond to his email. He sent me an email and I responded like an hour later. And I'm like, yeah, sure. And he's like, I already found someone. That whole business didn't go too far, but I did, after doing Matt Walsh's, I started, who actually had some really good footage. He had a lot of movies that I had seen, like Bad Santa and stuff. So I was really, loving doing that one. And then, I started to, I think I'd asked Matt Walsh or someone like, hey, can I edit your videos for, I think it was Besser. I can't remember. I asked if I could edit videos for free classes because I couldn't afford the 300 bucks a class, which is what they cost at the time. That was just outrageous for me.
300 I think that's bucks. Pretty much across the board.
Yeah.
Like countrywide, you know?
Yeah. So then he's like, sure. So I started editing like different sketches and like their show Ask Cat, I would edit the clips into short little clips and put them online on their website, UCB. Mm-hmm. I think it was UCBcomedy.com. It was like Funny or Die, but kind of smaller. Mm-hmm. I started taking all the free classes at that point, as many as I could. And then I started editing videos for a dude who used to be their artistic director who got canceled a long time ago, but I started editing for IO West, and they just had me start at level 4 because I was already an alumni at UCB, and I didn't really want to take the first classes at IO because you don't perform until level 5.
Really?
And so yeah, a 4 or 5, something like that. So I do a level 4, and it's, you know, like a level 2 for the most part. but it was, where's it getting at? Oh yeah. So I just started at level 4 and then went through their 7 levels, from 4 to 7.
And all these connections you're making through the editing, like you yeah. like did UCB and you were like, hey man, you know how we're going to make this, editing cash? Improv theaters. Let's find the next one. And then you're swinging in there and working it around to make it help your acting career as well. I mean, like excellent packaging of like sure. skills to, what you want out of it. I mean, great job. Why not? And pro tip to anyone listening, you all have some skill that they need. And if you can capitalize on what that is for the moment, you can do exactly what Dylan did and arrange a scenario in which they'll let you take the classes for free because you are helping them with stuff. This is how you do it. If you don't have the 300 bucks, for sure. 100% every improv class I ever took, I worked for instead of paid for. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Everyone.
Yeah. And it's a great way to meet folks. Yeah, absolutely. And anything, especially graphic design, is something that's always really handy. So
totally. Oh, my yeah. God. Please, graphic designers, get into improv. For sure. For sure. We need you desperately. God, I need a poster done like yesterday. You know what I mean? Like always. Oh, yeah. So that's cool. So you're like using your knowledge. At what point did you become ignited by the love of improv and really focus more on that? Or did you video edit during your entire improv journey in the LA scene?
I definitely edited for my whole time in LA. I was starting to make some money doing I was making tutorials for car salesmen, but it was like this really fun project where we'd get, there was like a cast that we'd get together in a fake car lot and like record them doing their things. And like, they had to do these things where they'd answer questions or whatever. So we'd set up the scenario and then they'd answer their questions and then move on to the next scenario to watch. And, that was actually kind of a fun project. It didn't pay that great for editing. Cause like, at the time, $50 an hour was supposed to be like the going rate, and I was making $25 an hour, but it was still better than waiting tables. So I was like, sure.
Yeah, $25 an hour, not terrible.
No. But I gotta say, like, the more I edited for money, the less I liked it. So I was like, this isn't the route for me. I'm not really enjoying this. But certainly knowing editing got me into sketch, which doing it for free, I really loved, at least at the time, certainly. But it's, when I moved out here, no one knew editing, and I kind of quit making sketches because I didn't always want to be the person to edit them. Sure. I can't say nobody knew, but I didn't have people in the comedy scene that were also editors.
Now wait, we've skipped something because now in your story, you've moved back to Omaha. I need to know this part of the journey, right? So I hear thousands of stories of people who are moving from wherever USA to LA or New York, but I rarely hear of the success story such as yours of moving back, right? Often it is like, I moved back and I joined this and I do this other thing now. And it's like slightly different, not quite the same kind of thing. But, you know, based on the small amount of research that I did, and please feel free to clean it up for me, it seems as if there was just a boom for you. Like that when you came back to Omaha, it was better. It like suited you and like you were able to flourish.
Yeah, it was, well, the move was specifically to teach. So I wasn't moving to Omaha because I just like, oh, LA isn't working, I'm moving back. Cause totally. I wasn't from Omaha. It was just the biggest city from where I was from, nearby from where I was from. But, I knew I was about 3.5 years into my improv career or whatever you'd want to call it. I hadn't really been making money yet, so I can't call it a career.
Sure you can. Why not?
3.5 years in. And at the time, it was really tough to be in the improv scene in LA because I was part of a group that was there when it was still not that famous. Like, again, yeah, they had a line going around the block, but not that many people in the scene. And then it really started to build over those 3.5 years. And right as everyone was kind of like getting some good stage time, all of a sudden a bunch of people from New York found out that people were making money in LA doing commercials and TV shows. So all these improvisers from New York started coming to LA, and it was just feeling like, oh man, I'm never going to get my time here. I can't imagine how long it'll take until I teach at this place. If ever, you know? And so, I was like, I don't think this is the right route for me right now. I didn't feel like I was growing. I needed to do something different. Again, something different than everyone else was doing. I wanted to move somewhere, and I knew like if I moved to Chicago or New York, it was just going to be a lot of the same. And I would just have to start over again. And I didn't really feel like that. I wanted to teach, and I knew teaching in LA was going to be tough. And so at the time, a lot of articles about like Omaha is one of the happiest cities in America right now, you know, and all this stuff. And there were a lot of different things about like how nice it was. You know, Omaha was like in the top 10 of different things. And I was like, oh, that's cool. I started to check out their scene. There was like no improv or comedy. And I was like, God, even if I'm not that good of a teacher, I'd have to imagine that I could at least teach people enough to start doing it themselves. And maybe I can learn to be a good teacher. You know, maybe if I teach long enough, I can figure it out and be good at it.
What inspired you to teach? Because your plans were either write or act. And now, and then there was a, must have been a moment where you were like, you know what, though? Teaching is the thing. What inspired that?
Yeah, well, a couple things. Because I used to never want to be a teacher. My college. Sure,
they don't sell it well.
No, my college was specifically meant for teachers. And I was like, oh, I don't want to be a teacher like all these people.
I went to teacher college and I was like, you guys are lame. It's like, you're here. Yeah.
So then I go to, or I'm taking my level two improv class, only my second one ever. And the whole time I was like, oh, I don't like the way this person's teaching. I wish they'd do this, or like, I want to teach someday because I wanted it taught differently, you know? And I learned at the time a lot of people hated their level two UCB teacher because it's like all of a sudden things get complicated, you know? I was then like, after I'd been doing it for a few years, I was talking to a guy named Gian Molina, and I don't know if you know him, he's no longer around, but we were on a team together, and he was mentioning that one of the things that made him so much better was teaching. He said, I got incredibly better teaching. I don't know if I'd be as good as I am right now if I had never taught. And so I started to think about like, oh, well, if I really want to get better, I should probably teach. If that's true, if teaching makes me better, then that's something I should probably count for. And everyone that I really loved at the time had been improvising for at least 10 years. So like the people who I was watching on stage, every single one of them had been doing it for at least 10 years. Except for maybe like a handful that were in my class that were like coming up quick that had been doing it for maybe like five, but you know, I knew I had some years before I hit 10, and I didn't know if I could keep doing what I was doing in LA in the last 10 years. So I thought, okay, I'll spend a couple of years teaching in Omaha and then maybe I'll come back, or, you know, worst case, I move out there and it doesn't work and I come back to Hollywood. You know, the opposite of the old tale. I'll move back to Hollywood if it doesn't work out. So,
well, but it's nice that you felt at least vaguely homey enough. I mean, from the sounds of it and in the larger story that we sort of touched on, this idea that you moved around a bunch, right? So if any place made you feel homey, hey man, put a pin in that and like focus, you know, you have a home place to go back to, you know what I mean? I could see how like moving around a bunch, there's like, I don't know where to settle, but if LA had enough friends and like, you knew it well enough, why not? I mean, we all go home somewhere, right? So I like that idea in your mind that you were like, well, I could always come back here if I decide to. Yeah. And also, by the way, I love that it was like articles that were like, everyone's super happy in Omaha, so let's move to Omaha. Like, go you. Like, way to look that up and try to move to the happiest place. Like, what a fun choice.
Well, so there's a lot of great stuff about LA, like, you know, being near the beach and the mountains and all that. But the people in the comedy scene I liked a lot. But outside of that, there's a like a hustler mentality in LA, and everyone's looking out for themselves. And that's just, to me, it just wasn't a good way to live because it was making me more like that. And I didn't like being like that. Mm. And, you know, you make friends just for how they can help you out and not because you actually appreciate being around them.
Yeah.
Based on the people I'm around alone, I am much happier in Omaha, even with all the cold weather and everything. Just because the people around here actually care, you know, like if I drop my wallet while I'm walking, someone's going to go, hey, you dropped your wallet, you know, not sneak up behind me, grab it, and then stab me, you know? Just for fun.
The extra stab for no reason. They could have just had that wallet.
Yeah.
They're right? Like, you know what? I got a wallet. Today's a good day. Let's get a stab in. What town is this? I won't move there. When did that happen? Oh, man. Oh,
I had a roommate who got stabbed in Hollywood. They didn't even ask her for her purse. They just stabbed her and then took the purse.
Take the purse. I'll give you my purse.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. All right. Yeah, I'd get out of there for sure. Yeah. Not that I haven't lived in very stabby locations. I have, for sure. I spent a lot of my formative years in New York City. So I get stabby. But so I love this vibe of Omaha. That sounds so great. When you went back there, how did you have like old friends from college there? How did you start building your community?
Yeah, I knew a handful of folks who were theater majors with me at my college who lived in Omaha now. So I'd asked them if they would take the class for free and could maybe help me get a couple extra folks in there. So using that and Craigslist at the time, I ended up getting like 7 people who paid for the class and like 6 people who took it for free. So it was a good sized class. And I moved back February. I left February 1st. So it's been 11 years now.
Wow.
And yeah, I got back February 3rd because it takes 2 days to drive. And by February 27th, I think it was, I started my first class. I had everyone signed up. I had a place and like, I was having everyone sign up before I even had a place. I came to Nebraska thinking I'll find somewhere I can hold a class. I'll figure it out somehow. And one of the dudes who was in my class is like, hey, I have an art gallery, like a private art gallery, and we can use the basement. We do jazz shows down there. It's a pretty nice place if you want to check it out. I came and it was like the brick wall and everything. And it was amazing. I was like, I love this place. It was really cheap. He let me rent it out for like $25 a day, you know.
Wow. Awesome.
Yeah. And, so it was just perfect from the beginning. And, it was like this really hip place. It was literally underground, but, there was no sign on the outside that said comedy or anything, at least for a long time. And so people would still fill the place just knowing that there was a comedy show in this basement. So we got super lucky right away with a number of things, like having a really great venue that had a really great location that had people who were interested in improv and comedy that wanted to come see it. And, so my first class, I get people in there and I'd never really taught. Like I tried teaching like kids once at a summer camp, but I didn't really know improv at the time. So so this was like my first time really teaching. I'd never even coached a team and I'd come up with this syllabus for class. We go through the first week and this guy who didn't know me at all comes up and he goes, hey, I know there's not really like a grade for you on teaching, but you got an A. And I was like, thanks, man. I really appreciate that. Their first class had a killer class show. They filled the audience with like 50 people. They just did so great that I basically signed up a whole nother level one just from that class show. And, things really hit the ground running at that time. And, you know, we've certainly had ebbs and flows, but it was a really nice start and it made me feel like things were going to be good.
Yeah, as well they are, for sure. The first few performances, was it all student shows or did you get the people from that first class and like, you know, get them to create troupes and to develop more shows?
So the first show was just a student show. I think the first 2 or 3 shows were just student shows. But then we started to form some teams and we did, I wanted to come up with my own thing that was kind of like an ASCAD or an Armando or, there was a show at UCB that was it was originally called MySpace, but then Facebook, I think they still run it. And I really liked those styles where they would take part of your real life and then do scenes on it. And we created this show called Interrogate It, and that was our first show. So that was the first one where everyone was in like level two. So it was like, everyone was still very new, but it was a lot of fun. We'd get people to confess something they got away with, and then we'd do scenes based off it. And, it was a really fun hit right away as well. And so that show's still around. It's still one of our biggest shows 11 years later.
I mean, that's a great premise.
Yeah.
Like the idea of a confession, number one, about anything at all. Great. Right.
Yeah.
And then something you got away with. Oh, now did you get somebody planned? Like, were you like, Johnny, will you tell that story? Or were you like in the audience and you're like, who's got a story for us?
We'd get it from the audience. So it's a little different than like Armando or ASCAT, where like we wouldn't bring in a guest. We've done it a few times, but for the most part, it's people from the audience.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. The only reason why I asked was not necessarily form related, but more like because it's such a big deal to like tell this secret about yourself. And yeah. And then like, would you do it for strangers? I guess so. Like, what did you say? 11 years, they're still doing it.
Yeah. I mean, we have to pull teeth a little bit, but they do it.
Wow. Man. People are just dying to tell their secrets. I guess that's what I shouldn't be surprised. I've read the internet.
And, you know, we don't stream that show or anything. So
yeah.
People see that they're kept with everyone in that room.
Yeah. Yeah. Your secret's safe with us, 50 people.
Yeah.
Oh, we've had man.
Some wild stories too. We had someone who confessed about like when they were a kid, they burnt down this building and everyone was like, you're the one who burnt that building down. It didn't burn down, but it burnt and started on fire. Yeah.
Like, what? Oh, I love it. No, it's exactly like, yeah, I love that idea. I love the other people like, what?
We had a guy who once said he was drinking and driving and he got hit by a lawyer for drinking and driving. And he's like, the guy was really cool. And like, or no, he hit a guy. He hit some, fuck, I can't remember how it was.
Somebody was else hit him?
He was drinking and driving, but then he got hit by someone else who was also drinking and driving. And that guy was a lawyer and like something about like how they talked or whatever. And we're like, oh, this is a weird story. But then like 3 months later, we get the lawyer who is like, so I was drinking and driving and I hit this guy. And we're like, you're the other half of that story.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Dude, that's like some dating game stuff where they're like, wait, what? You? Oh my God. This is your life, you know? Yeah. Oh God. Did they tell the same story or did the lawyer change it? Like, was it different?
It was very clearly the same story. Oh, it was, yeah, it was great. Yeah. He's actually had 3 DUIs himself, or 2 or 3 DUIs himself, and he's a lawyer. Oh,
my God. Hey, man, people are people. Just because he's got a job as a lawyer doesn't mean that he's not a person who's going to mess up and do that kind of stuff. Oh, my God. I love that you got both sides of that story. That's a fun one. I mean, I suppose it worked out for both of them. So why not retell the story, right?
Yeah.
Oh, man. So that's so fun. I really enjoy that. And I like that you just wanted something. So you made it yourself. You know, there's so many people out there, and I'm sure you meet them since you're, you know, leading a community now who think that things need to be provided for them. Like, oh, can you give me some opportunities? And you're like, yeah, I mean, if you want to do stuff, you just do that stuff. Like, that's how it works. You're like, oh, I'd love to be in a play. Awesome. Find one and then do that play. You can pay for the rights if you want to, but mostly people don't care, you know, so do that. Like, if you're not making that much money. Yeah, there you go. There you go. Yeah, so, I mean, since you were since you got into the improv, speaking of writing your own, since you're in the improv world, you wanted to write and stuff like that. Is that what, did you start doing writing classes? Did you, how did you get into, because I see that you do sketch. So like, how did that develop from I'm teaching improv to, you know, teaching and doing writing and sketch and stuff like that?
Sure. So I definitely took a few sketch classes at UCB. There were a few things that I don't know. They didn't have a whole lot at the time, at least. I think they had two sketch classes, sketch one and two. So I took both of them and I was like, well, now what? I did a lot of sketches because, like I was saying, I was editing video. And so having that skill made people want to do sketches with me because I would edit the video. but we also had, we had run into this guy who had just sold his software for like $500,000 or something. And he wanted to become a director. So he bought all this equipment and just wanted to start making things. So he made like our first 10 sketches basically, which was such a huge help getting started, having somebody there who was like dedicated and had the equipment. Cause we didn't, nobody had good cameras or anything or lights. And of course, like we were all still very new at it. So like one of our first shots, we had to have a generator in the room just to have the lights. And it was so loud, we had to redub the audio.
Wow, you learned a lot on that shoot. You learned a lot about lighting and ADR. Look at you.
Yeah.
I have been there, my friend. I have been there.
So even though I didn't do a whole lot of sketch classes, I had a lot of experience making sketch and working with other folks making sketch. So when it came to classes, I've only taught a handful still. I think I've probably taught maybe like 10 at my theater, maybe a little bit more, but somewhere around there. It's not a whole lot compared to improv classes. It's something that I really like doing, and I'm getting more into teaching it as I've sort of found my own ways of doing it. So I used to just teach the way I was taught at UCB, and we would sit down in a class and we would write, was it like 5 sketches throughout the 7 or 8 weeks. But most of the time people would like drop out. They wouldn't do a sketch. So they would just never show up the next week. And then they wouldn't show up the week after that. And they'd just disappear. Or we'd make some really great sketches and no one would do anything with them. And it's like, well, okay. So I started to get people who were like, I want to do a show. And I started to craft a sketch class that was, we now spend the 7 weeks making an actual sketch show where no one's looking at a script or anything. People have them basically memorized, and can get up there and perform a 30-minute sketch show in front of an audience in 7 weeks. So,
I think that's the way to do it.
Yeah, people like that one a lot.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, excellent refurb of the idea for sure. Because you're right, like people get so nervous about like their output, and if they don't feel like they've written enough, they disappear. I've had that a lot. Yeah. Where like you have a class and you think it's going well, and then by the end there's 2 people and you're like, "Okay, guys, let's do a reading." It'll be 10 minutes. But like, yeah. Building a show, it also like gives you lessons that you have no way of knowing they're going to give, and helpful lessons for if you need to make this on your own, think about what happened with us. Like even things like, cause I've done that too, where I've taken a class and done a fully acted out version. I used to do that with my like sketch two. I'd get for the sketch one, I did a reading, and then sketch two, I'd do like a full performance. But there were a couple scenarios where actors who are not being paid kind of bail last minute. And you have to figure that out right before that. And that's real. Yeah. Like that's just happened. You know, I produced a sketch show for 8 years. People just drop out day of sometimes, you know, just what happens. And that's insane, but you have to figure it out. And I feel like those lessons are the lessons that like really get a person the meat of learning what it is to create a show.
Yeah. there was I'd say kind of a spark to do this style of sketch was when Kevin McDonald came. He had reached out and wanted to come teach sketch, and he teaches it through improvisation, which is funny enough, like a way I had not learned after years of improv and sketch.
Same. When I met Kevin McDonald, he also taught me how to do improv into sketch. I had only just been either writing or doing improv separate, for sure.
I got you. It's made that whole process and memorization so much easier. So we sit down and, you know, we come up with an idea, we come up with some bullet points, some beats, and then we improvise it. And I record it on video. And then we have somebody go up and we do it a second time, like a couple weeks later. And then we have somebody watch the video and type up the sketch, as if it's an actual script that way. And then that way the memorization is really easy because this person's already improvised it twice naturally. And it's made that whole process really easy. And so, like, also, if somebody drops, everyone's also already familiar enough a little bit with, like, that character that they can hop in. So we haven't had a whole lot of people drop in this style, but the couple times we have, it's been easy enough to get people to fill in.
No, I think you're totally right that the style of doing sketch that way creates sort of an ownership for the performer in a way that, like, just being a performer for a writer feels distant. You know what I mean? So I appreciate that, you know, that definitely gives both creating a show and then doing this improv to sketch style totally hooks in the performer so that they stick around because there's an ownership. There's, I made this. This is mine. As opposed to like, oh, Joey wrote it and I guess I'm going to be in it. You know, that kind of thing.
Going to back to the idea of like running it, running the sketch show, like figuring out the right way to kind of like have the class and all that. There's a quote from Warren Buffett that I remind myself often of. He's an Omaha guy, if you don't know. And I don't remember the quote verbatim, but it's basically, don't run your business the way it's been ran before. Run your business the way you think it should be ran.
Oh.
And that's something I really try to keep in mind often is like, am I doing things the way everyone's always done it? Or do I really think this is the best way to do it?
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's a lot about learning from your growth in that quote as well. Like allowing yourself to change. You know, you became a different person when you came and decided to focus on teaching. And then as you're building your community and learning and figuring out how do I get butts in seats, that helps you develop the way that you create your, because every city's got a different vibe to their community. So it's nice that you know, took the time and tried stuff out and learned and, you know, adjusted, evolved as you moved forward. I mean, I think that's the only way, you know? Yeah. Wow. You just put together so much great info and connected it. Now, here's a question. You had mentioned in your, in the information you sent to me up front, the Omaha Improv Festival. Is it Fest or Festival?
Fest. And it's now Omaha Comedy Fest. We've added all comedy.
Omaha Comedy Fest. Now, I was looking at that, and that says that's been around for 8 years. You mentioned that you've been in Omaha for 11, so my brain explodes a little thinking, yeah, I did 3 years of doing this school and building this community and creating classes and like spearheading this thing. You know what? I'd love more work. So I'm going to start a festival and have that people from all over the world. What possessed you to do that? I mean, like, I get it, but also like, oh my God, so much work. How did you like do that? How did you maintain that?
Well, the first funny thing, you said we've had 8 festivals, but one of those was a year off because of the pandemic. So it was actually 9 years ago.
Oh, so it was 2 years in that you were like, yeah, it's cool. I can do a festival. I like it. My God. Yeah. Well, You're wild.
I knew that people needed some other teachers besides me. And I thought a festival might be a great way to bring in some other coaches. And bring them to the people in Omaha. And
good for you.
I didn't quite think I would get as big of coaches my first year as I had thought. Quite honestly, I figured I would get like a coach from like Des Moines, Kansas City, and maybe Minneapolis or something. Like, I didn't really know.
Still
I
thought pretty cool. Yeah.
There's plenty of great coaches in those areas. But I reached out to my favorite teacher, who was Craig Kakowski, who most people probably know if you do improv. He's amazing. And I asked him, I said, hey, I'm running this festival, and how much would you come out for if we were to do this? And his budget was reasonable enough. And I was like, I think we can make this work. I think I can sell these workshops. And then once he was on board, I had reached out to, I don't even remember how I found him. Somehow Rick Andrews had like gotten a hold of me from Magnet Theater in New York. And he was like, hey, I hear you're doing a festival or something. I'd love to come or something. I don't remember exactly how I found him or he found me. And I was like, sure. Yeah. I don't really know you, but I Magnet sounds like a cool place. I'm down to have you come. And someone said some good things about you. So I'm pretty sure like I'm down.
Is he originally from Omaha maybe? And he was like, listen, I want to visit my mom. And I thought like, hey, let's make it a work trip. Like,
I think he was just trying to do more stuff on the road, I think, if I were to guess. I think that was probably his goal, was just to do more cities.
Man, fun. Good for him. And also, like, another tip to listeners is, like, hey, man, just call up a festival and be like, hey, can I be in it? Sometimes that works. Who knows? Yeah. Who knows? I like it. I like it. Bold all around.
Yeah. So then I had somehow talked to Jimmy Crane, who I don't even know how I knew him or like we were friends or whatever, but someone had maybe suggested him and I reached out and said, hey, I have Craig Kakowski and Rick Andrews. And he had already interviewed both of those people. And so he's like, if you have those two, sure. I'm down to see what Omaha's doing. But only if I can do a podcast with Craig while I'm down there. And I'm like, well, let me ask Craig. And he of course was down. Or maybe he hadn't interviewed Craig yet. Yeah, he hadn't interviewed Craig yet. But that was the episode. Was the in Omaha, the Omaha Improv Fest. So if you listen to
Craig, was making connections. I love it. Ask and you shall receive. Never forget that, y'all.
Yeah, and it was fun. It was everything was really picking up at that time. We sold all the workshops. Basically broke even, but that was fine. That's all that I needed to do. And we ended up moving to a different location shortly after, hoping to grow more, you know, at the time. Plus the place we were in was like probably going to be closed down because it wasn't legit.
Sure.
We had one bathroom and that alone would have got us closed down.
Yeah.
Me too in Nebraska. So,
yeah. Sure. Absolutely. You start putting a lot of people in one place. They never expected that many people would look at art. And now all of a sudden, as they waited in line, they were perusing these paintings. Yeah. Yeah, no, I get it. Believe me, I've done theater in a lot of not legal places. So I get it for sure. Sustaining that kind of stuff can be super tough. How'd you get the new space?
It was funny enough. I went through Craigslist again at the time. That was like everything you needed at the time.
That's how I got everything until I was maybe 30 years old, was just Craigslist. Yeah. Roommates, furniture, jobs, dates. Yeah. I mean, it's where you found everything.
So they had this place that was downtown for $1,200 a month, all utilities paid. And I was like, I can make this work.
Whoa.
I was like, it's going to cost like a little bit to like make this look like a theater, but it was a big space, huge. It's 2000 square feet. And so I'm like, yeah, I can figure something out here. I think this will work.
Did you like live in the back?
I wish. I would have, I probably would if it wasn't illegal for me to live there.
Oh, it's sure. I mean, of like, course it was illegal. Yeah, it was definitely illegal. But, again, been lots of, you know, I definitely lived one of my first ever apartment in New York City was a commercially zoned theater for sure. 100%. Yeah. Me and like 10 people. Like there were 10 different people that lived in this warehouse, and it was not right at all.
Did you do plays? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a guy who was the artistic director, and he owned it, and he like leased all the rooms to us. And I think we essentially just paid the rent for him, and he did plays. There was a humongous rehearsal space. It looked like a dance studio. There were two walls that were just mirrors, and then there was a big wall of windows. It was a gorgeous, like, big, huge spot. They did like big productions with like a lot of drums and stuff, real avant-garde stuff. And they'd have the rehearsals in there, and they'd have plays. So I'd wake up in the morning and there'd just be strangers eating my bagels in the kitchen. Like, and I just had to be fine with that. That was just like part of it. It's like, if you have separate food, keep it in your room and lock the door, because there's strangers in here at all times. It was wild. Great and vibrant and wonderful, but illegal in all ways. And I won't even name the theater because I'm now concerned about them backlogging that poor gentleman who had a great idea to get 12 of us into New York City. It was an awesome experience, but, you know, so you're in the new space, you're like thriving, you're starting this, you know.
Well, it didn't start good, because like, when we moved, we went from like this really awesome place that had a really great crowd and like a good part of town. And then we moved downtown to this area that was kind of like scary. It was, it had been a part that had been started to be abandoned. So there was like most of the businesses weren't open at that point, and there were like no streetlights. Our block was fucking dark, and people were scared to leave at night.
Oh my God.
Without someone walking them. And it's like, one of the first things we did was we put giant floodlights outside our place, just so there was a lot of light on our street.
My gosh. No wonder it was so cheap. They're like, yeah, take it.
Yeah, sure. You might die, but go for it.
Yeah, you're all right. You're right. Just make sure to pay rent first.
But I also thought at some point this place has got to pick up. And hopefully by the time we're getting better, it's picking up. And now, I mean, it's been like 8 years, but it's becoming a nice hip part of town, which is really nice.
Oh, great.
And, yeah,
and you were able to maintain it through the pandemic. Good for you, man. Good for you. I'm so happy for that. There's so much insanity. And I'm just so happy to hear that you're like, oh, yeah, no, I mean, we still have the space. Like, that's great.
Yeah. I think, you know, being a smaller place still, like, you know, a lot of the larger theaters had some closings. But I think, from what I understand, a lot of the smaller theater places, at least improv, I think, lasted. I don't know.
Well, real estate was hard for a lot of people. When theater spaces essentially went empty for so long, maintaining paying the rent no longer became plausible for a lot of theaters. I'm going to say that like 3 theaters here in town just lost their space. The community still exists, and they still do classes in random locations now, but they lost the physical spaces that they had because it was just, you know, I mean, perhaps Omaha, not like Austin. Austin, all of a sudden in the middle of the pandemic, became the most exciting place to live, and the real estate doubled. Like houses that were $200,000 are now $450,000, and you're like, I'm sorry, what? I'm not moving to that neighborhood for $450,000. I'll tell you what, like, but the people that are moving in don't know, and so like businesses got like, you know, people's landlords were like, no, I can make a lot of money selling this building to so and so, so get out, and it, you know, no good.
Damn. Well. Yeah,
that's why I'm so excited for you and like happy, and like that like makes me happy for you and makes me happy for your community, and like that like Omaha is still solid. Like, you know, there's been so much in the way of ups and downs that I'm just like, when I hear a story that's like positive, I'm all like, yes, great. Great. Yeah, let's hang out with you guys.
We had some people in the community who were very helpful as well. We had someone who was just like, came and dropped a check for $2,000 under our door. And we're like, aww, that's so kind.
Yeah, that's wonderful. It's nice that you've clearly built a community that like takes care of each other, that you guys are like really thriving together. Now, have you since the beginning, you mentioned that you started the festival because you wanted to get more teachers, but have more teachers moved to town or people who took classes move their way up and also said, I like to teach? Do you have like a few more people teaching classes with you?
Sure. We've got, A lot of our teachers are teachers who have come through the program, but we have a guy named Timmy Tamasia who was from Chicago and then LA, and now he lives in Omaha. He's going to be teaching a sketch class starting soon. And he teaches for AMDA as well. We have someone who was in my very first class. He was like an alumni and taught like one class before moving to Chicago. And then he was on a house team in Chicago for like 8 years at IO. He was just about to start teaching a class at IO right before the pandemic even. But then he ended up moving back to Omaha, and he's going to be teaching a level 3 coming up in a little bit here. So
good.
We've got someone who's teaching a musical improv class that I'm even taking her class. So
exciting. And sometimes
my own students are like, why are you taking a class? Don't you know enough? But I constantly keep learning. Every festival I take at least one workshop from someone I want to learn from.
Totally. And,
yeah.
Plus, if I've learned anything from doing 300 interviews with people, and it's 90% improv, like there's 10% other artists, that I'm talking to, but I mean, it's 90% improv, and there are different styles and different ways of looking at it, different philosophies and ways of approaching it or using improv to approach something else. So, between creative minds of people that are just around and different countries, different influences, like when the idea that gentleman went to Chicago, learned a bunch of stuff and came back. Yeah, it's a different scene. It's a different vibe. He brought back some like, hey, they're using it this way, right? Let's do that. And then you can teach people to look at it in a different way. It's almost like writing in that there's so many ways to do it and there's so many angles to come at it, right? Sometimes you're writing a novel. Sometimes you're writing a tweet, there are different ways to do things. Sometimes you're writing content, like there's different styles of how you do stuff. So why not learn them all? Right. Especially if you like the art and you're like into it and stuff like that. Plus you're, as has been established from us chatting and then also the breadth of work that you've done, you're excited about it. Like you're into it. Why wouldn't you want to take more classes? Every time I teach the same level one class to people, I love it. And it teaches me so much more. Like the 100th time I taught, this emotions exercise that I'd been teaching to level one students, it all of a sudden light bulb dawned on me that I could literally use this for my own like psychological self. Like I did this exercise where it was like they did these monologues and then after we'd talk about where they felt the emotion in their body, like you're happy, you feel it in your cheeks, or like you're angry, you feel your clenching jaw. And I would say whatever the physical feeling is when you're acting, you don't have to necessarily feel that, just do the physical thing and it'll help you get into the vibe. You want your character to be angry, clench that jaw and come in and it'll do it for you. It'll get a little bit of the vibe in the scene. And in level one, people are like, I'm not an actor, I can't do it. So you have to give them these little things. But when I did the exercise after the 100th time, I was like, oh, hey, I could be aware of my own emotions in my body in life, like so that I don't make a bad decision because I'm angry, or like I can acknowledge, oh, I'm afraid now. So maybe I'm not in the right mind state to make this decision about whether or not to do something, like once I turned it into something I could actually use in like my real life, I was like, oh, wow, this improv stuff, this was really, this is helpful on many levels. But it took me like years of teaching before I like was able to see, and teaching the same thing too, using that same exercise to get just new performers okay with acting, like giving them a little trick so that they didn't feel like, well, how am I going to cry? You don't have to cry. Does everybody cry every time they're sad? No. you know?
When I see new teachers, when we get new teachers up, I usually tell them, like, your improv's probably going to be a little rough at first. Cause like, almost always you get up there and then your students are in the audience and then you realize, shit, I'm doing the thing I tell them not to do. almost all of my teachers say the same thing. Like they're doing a show in front of their students and then they're like, oh man, they're judging me because of this thing.
Yeah. I usually like to preface that kind of thing, though, with the idea of like, you know, of course, the way that I teach is the way I understand improv. And if I'm teaching you to avoid something, it's because I am falling in that pitfall every time. Yeah. It's like, man, every time I get up there, I do this. Guys, don't do that. Like, that's life. That's how you have, you know, that's how you parent too. Like, I have a 4-year-old and like my whole parenting style is don't be like me. Like, you know what I mean?
Like, don't tell jokes or puns, but like, that's all I do on stage.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's like, never say no. Your first line. No, John, I really think it's like, okay, well, see, the thing is, I didn't know his situation. I just knowed his question, which, you know, oh man. So you got a million things going on and you're like, yeah. Hey, you know what? I'd love another project. How about I do some animation? What? How'd you get into that?
So, during my first, when I was just starting my improv class at UCB, I think I'd even just started a sketch class. A bunch of us improvisers got together and we're like, let's try to write some sketches. In our very first meeting, I came up with this idea of like, what if these little creatures that lived under ground that were like humans, but not, were actually like what was mistaken for different monsters. And they're like, what? That's not a sketch. And I'm like, oh, okay. And so I just sat on this idea that no one wanted to do as a sketch. And I was like, yeah, I couldn't film it anyways. I don't know what I would do to film this. Mm. And, I then was like, you know, I should probably write it out as a feature length film. Cause I do like the idea. So I started, I don't know why I thought it'd be a feature length film, but I was like, yeah, if I got the budget for a film, I bet we could make this. So I started making this
sci-fi, always good for your first feature film,
right? Yeah. So I was like, oh man, maybe. And as I'm writing, I started to go through all these different locations and stuff, and I'm like, there's no way I could ever get the budget to like film this, especially like my first thing. Like, this is probably a waste. So I kind of put it down for a little bit, and then I thought, what if it's a book? Because that I could write by myself, and then if people like it, then they'll make it a movie. And I was like, okay, great. So I started writing this book and I made it, you know, and then like 30 pages or something in. And I was like, I don't think I want to write this as a book. That's so much work. And I just wasn't feeling it. I'd never written a book before. So I sat on it again for a while. And then I'd tried animating a couple of times. I'd done some really basic projects. One where I just had like the mouth move like South Park style. And then like one where it was actually, I'd drawn everything, but just the mouth itself, like not the bottom jaw, but just the mouth itself moved basically. And it was like really basic, but I was like, oh, I kind of want to animate again, but I don't know what I would animate. And then it clicked that I had this project that I didn't know what to do with. And I was like, that could be an animation. And they could just be short ones. Like, that way I can actually do them in time, like get them done. Cause I had made one that was like 3 minutes in 1 month once. And I was like, okay, if I could do an episode a month, that would be good. I ended up spending a lot more time on these. So it takes me like a year for a 3.5 minute animation right now. And I'm done with 3 of them. So,
well, it's not your main gig. It's not the thing that you're spending all your time on. I think it takes 6 months for like people whose job it is full time. Like, you ever see the list of names on an animated show? Like I said, I got a 4-year-old. I read those credits. Yeah. I'm looking. I'm like, look at how many people required to make this show that we just watched that was 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's a lot. It's a lot. So, hey, give yourself a break. You are also teaching improv, working jobs, and running festivals and maintaining a community. You got a lot on your plate, man. One a year. Super proud of you, man.
Sure.
I don't know how to animate anything. So the whole, it's like a magic trick you're telling me that you can do. And I'm like, dude, I'm just impressed you could do the magic trick.
So, yeah, I mean, I think at this point, though, I can't keep doing one a year. So I'm going to.
Sure.
I need to find an animator who can help me do them quicker. Because I like the writing. I don't even mind editing the audio. I really spent a lot of time on this last one. I spent like a month just editing the audio. So when I'm saying like it took a year, it's for the whole thing. But
totally.
That stuff, it's just the actual animation that like, oh my God, I'm still pretty new at it all. And like, I'm not quick at all with it. But I did get very lucky. I don't know if lucky again, but I reached out to some of my contacts this time to try to get some good voices. My first two episodes were all local talent. So I still used like the best local people I could get. But I wanted some folks that actually had either some experience or like maybe a little bit of a following to help me get the word out. Kevin McDonald, as I said, he'd come here before. He's just been the nicest person to know and just a real cool dude. And like, he treats me more like a friend than just like someone who's a business. And that's really nice.
Yeah.
Like a place he comes by. We had flooding here in Nebraska once, and when he was here, I had told him my sister lives in Valley, and he had heard that Valley, Nebraska was flooding, and he reached out to me and said, hey, how's your sister doing? I know she lives in Valley. And I was like, wow, you remembered that. Like a year later, you remembered that.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
I know. Yeah. He's such a sweetie, just a nice person. And like, he's connecting with people all over, you know, like doing the workshops and going around. And he really does stay connected with so many people because he stays connected with me too. I talked to him right after I had my baby. He was like, congratulations. I'm like, what? Like, how do you and even know?
Media,
no, he's yeah. not. Like, well, somebody must have, I don't know. There's a lot of connections, but just like the idea of that is like him checking on your sister. Like, yeah. I've heard that story from other people too. Like, this man is a kind, sweet, wonderful performer. I mean, we should all be so kind. You know what I mean? Like, it's just so wonderful. And I love that you got him to do a voiceover in the thing. Cause yeah, he does tons of voiceover work. He must have really like, just been a great voice to edit in.
Yeah. I was really like, I thought maybe he would like charge me some money, but it would be maybe like a good deal. So I reached out and was like, hey, like how much would you do this for? I didn't even think he would do it for free. But he did. He recorded it for free. And he was like, look, if you ever make money off this, give it to me. But otherwise we're good. So nice.
Yeah.
I'd asked him to be Dracula, and it's not a typical Dracula role. It's kind of like a more maybe meek Dracula.
Kevin McDonald Dracula. Yeah. I get it.
I thought like he'd be a really fun person. He sent me like all the audio like later that day. I think he just did it in one day, sent it to me. And he's like, here you go. And from there, once I had him, I'd reached out to Billy Merritt, who does a voice for Steven Universe.
Right.
Yeah. I had a lot of fun getting some really good talent for this one. And going forward, I want to keep that up. And now that I have it up, people are like, hey, can I be a voiceover? And I'm like, you're not talented enough. No, I'm just kidding. I don't say that.
Not for you.
Get a couple movie credits and we'll talk.
Yeah, maybe.
It's really nice that people want to be a part of this project now. People are like, can I write with you and stuff? The only thing I need though is people to animate, and no one's saying, can I animate? Because as soon as someone says that, I'll say yes.
Yeah. Well, have you thought about, remember when you were, and I only say this because I've done this, which is go to schools and ask them in the same way that you were acting in student films. There are kids all across the world in animation schools who need projects to do. And if you were like, hey, man, can you animate this thing? I just maybe have some like kids in the hall in it or whatever. It's not a big deal. They'd be like, yeah, let me get involved in that. It might not be the best right out, but you know what I mean? Like, if maybe for a new project, I appreciate you want to amp up this one that you're a few episodes into perhaps, but like, you know, just thinking about it purely out of your own stories, like, hey, you know, there's been some, let's see what the colleges have that can help me out. Maybe there's some colleges in the area that do animation. That's how people get haircuts and dental appointments, right? That's how everyone I know does it. So,
well, yeah, there's not a lot of animation in Nebraska, but
sure.
I did reach out to someone. I went to this the Omaha Film Fest, and they had this short animation, and I reached out to the animator of that, and she goes, that's not my style. I like family friendly stuff.
Oh, like, yeah, sure. Okay, fair enough. Yeah.
Mine's showing like weird little naked alien things, right?
Yeah, I can see how there's probably like two groups of animators. There's the for kids and the not for kids. Uh-huh. Yeah, for real. So you are developing so many projects. You're just like such a self-starter. I mean, what keeps you motivated? What keeps you flowing with all this? There's so much that you're putting out. There's so much work that you have to do. I mean, you must get exhausted, like physically, emotionally, like just wiped out. What keeps you fresh? What keeps you going?
Oh, that's what all my depressed friends ask me.
And I say lots of drugs, and then they, you know, go to their doctors. So I'm just trying to help.
I think some of the things that keep me going is I love to create. I love to make new things. So when I'm bored, I just start doing something, whether it's music or writing or just a video. I like that process of making something. And to me, like without that ability, I don't think I would be happy personally. I just don't. I don't think I could do like a job that didn't allow me to be creative and have no hobbies that allowed me to be creative. I don't think I could do that life. And so for me, it's like, that is pretty much a lot of it is just, I want to be creating things. I want to be making things. I love thinking about how to do things as well. There's stuff that I would be doing if I had the ability to that I'm not doing right now. I'd love to get more into science, but like without an end to that, I can't, right? Like I can't, I mean, maybe I could buy a CRISPR and just see what I can make, but.
Yeah, those are available. They're on Amazon. It's available. You just get a couple. It's fine.
I'm just making mutated frogs from home, everybody. No big deal.
And then I animate them, and it's a different kind of animation, more Frankenstein, less.
I thought if I just make these creatures in real life, I wouldn't need to cast actors.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of what ifs in my story, so I said, well, let's find out, you know. Oh my God, that's hilarious. Now I feel like that, like not actual science, but like the idea of that is the next story. It's like a guy who like got enough money to buy a CRISPR and like, what did he do? Like, and how did he ruin the world? Like, love it.
No, honestly though, like as a kid, I thought of I didn't know the term then, but genetic engineering was like something that would have just been a dream job for me as a kid. And I was like, well, that's not really a thing that'll ever be anything my whole life. So I was like, ah, all right, that's just a dream, right?
Dude, you know what's crazy is I like legitimately went to college for that. Like at first, I searched for colleges for science, for genetics, and like was really focused, took all the science tests, took everything to get into that program because I too was obsessed with it. And then as soon as I got there, I had this like realization that what I really wanted to do was be in theater. And so I dropped it all. And they were like, what a waste of all those tests you took. And I was like, it was fine. And I even like made them give me extra math tests. They were like, you don't need this test. I was like, just give it to me. I want to take it. But like, and then I quit. And they're like, and then you quit? I'm like, I'm sorry. Like, I decided I wanted to be in theater. But I really wonder, since like I've never talked to another person who was like, but what I really am interested in is genetics. Like, dude, me too. And I wonder if it's more of the creation of characters, storytelling, like putting things together almost in a 23andMe-ish kind of way where it's like this guy and these guys, they're all related. And because of that, we understand XYZ about them. Like that and story building are kind of similar. I don't know. I mean, what do you think? Because I've literally never talked to another person who was into it.
Oh, man. I wanted to make people who could fly. Mm-hmm. That was like something that I was like, oh my God, if I could figure out how to give people wings, you know, or something like that, like, wouldn't that be cool? I think I watched a lot of X-Men, which probably led to that. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I always liked doing some of the, I don't know if you ever played video games, but I would play Game Shark. And it was like a cheat codes for your video games. And I would make up codes and then try them out. And I would spend dozens of hours, hundreds of hours doing, just trying out codes and seeing how it worked on a video game. And I'd made like weird stuff, like the mountains were taller, you know, but like,
changed the game entirely.
Yeah. But like, that stuff was really fun. And I think it's probably like the same part of me that's just like, I just want to try out things and see what they do.
Yeah.
One of my first attempts was, as a kid, I took apart my Nintendo and I thought, my dad soldered a lot and I saw that there were like those little like soldered pieces on there or whatever, you know, like the melted metal. And I was like, I wonder if I just connect this piece to this piece, if that would make it run better. Cause I don't know how any of that fucking works. So I like used a soldering gun as like a 9 year old, and fucked up my Nintendo and it never worked again.
I was like, you could have burned down the house. Like, that's not. Yeah. I mean, I just learned about some battery danger just like yesterday, like where they were like, no, you can't do that with batteries. It'll cause a fire. And I'm like, it can. So like, believe me, now that I know, I'm all like, wait, watch out. I was gearing up for another. I burnt part of the field down stories. I thought we were coming back. We were going full circle. You're like, and then my uncle came in and was like, again?
Now I want to know how you start a fire with batteries, though.
Yeah.
Not in a long line or something? Or
No. We were talking about, we were watching that episode of I Think You Should Leave, where there's a character in the sketch where his wife ate a battery. And I was like, is it really bad to eat a battery? And my husband was like, yeah, a lithium battery in your can react to your stomach acid, and the acid and the thing can cause a spark, and who knows what could happen. Like, and I know that like you're unlikely to start a fire inside my stomach, but like I think there could be like a reaction of some kind that clearly kills the person. And I was like, what? I was like, are you kidding me? And he was like, yeah, batteries aren't safe things to eat. And I was like, well, no, I didn't think so, but I didn't expect that much. You know, I thought it'd maybe be like, oh, that's uncomfortable on the way out. But like, no, it's like a literal like chemical reaction inside your body, like that you do not want to have. And I was like, oh no. So, I mean, you know, it's like tools around your house you don't think are bad until somebody's like, hey, you know, if you do this with it, terrible happens. And you're like, what? Don't do that then. But, you know, it's because of kids like you taking apart Nintendos that we know these things, you know? Oh, man. Oh, cool. It's such great stuff. You're very inspiring for people who are go-getters, who are like, I want to make something, but the world doesn't seem to have it. Like, I could, you know, I'm very inspired by this idea that it's like, yeah, I wanted to make a school, so I did. I wanted there to be a festival and have cool teachers, so I called them and they came. Like, what? But it's true. I mean, sometimes it's just a matter of saying like, hey, do you want to be in a class? And somebody's like, all right. And then it happens. Like, so like having the confidence in yourself to do that and like maintaining and putting it together, like that's so strong. And it's so like, it's just good for you. And like, thank you for doing it because it's inspiring and it like helps a community. It fulfills you, but it also like, I don't know, fulfill so many other people. And we need people like you out there who are willing to take those chances. For those of us who are like, I'd like to join a group. Is there a group? You know, so like great job doing that for the whole community and building up so much.
Thanks. Yeah. Also for those who want to learn, something I really want to start doing is going to a city for an extended time, like maybe a month, and teaching intensives and like kickstarting communities. I think that would be a fun thing to do.
Totally.
So if anybody's out there and you're like, oh, come to our town for a month, we'll put you in an Airbnb or something, whatever. Yeah. I'm down.
So. Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of towns out there where there's just like one kid who read, you know, a book in a library and is like, I'd love to start an improv theater, but I don't know what that means. So if you need help, sounds like Dylan's offering some tips. So I like that. That's super awesome.
Especially and very helpful. Especially in a really cool city.
No, only on cool cities call him. It'll be fun. Let's make them cool. I need some people to move away from Austin. So if we can make another town cooler than Austin. Guys, work on it, please. Dylan, we have talked and talked. I really have had a great time. I'm sorry I've taken up so much of your day, but golly, it has been a great chat with you. Thank you so much for being on the podcast and sharing your stories and just inspiring me and the audience to, you know, put things together. When you have an idea, just do it. So good.
And if anybody's interested in seeing my animation, it's called Troglo Bites. It's Troglo and then a dash and then bites with an I, because they got little teeth, right? The animated series. YouTube Troglo Bites, the animated series. It should come up. That's what I'd love for some folks to do.
Absolutely. Definitely. Yeah, we'll get some eyes on there. I love how you spell it Troglo. Like everyone's like, oh, of course I know how to spell that. Don't worry, I'll put it all in the in the blurb. You'll see it. But I just love the way you spelled it. And then you're like, bites with an I. It's like, that was the hard. Yeah, that was the hard half. We should definitely give notes on that one. Oh, you're so funny. Oh, so good. Yeah, it's a great show, super funny, and you're just doing such great work in Omaha. Thank you so much for being there and for, you know, making the whole U.S. lots of tiny, wonderful, beautiful communities of improv everywhere all around so that we can be one big, awesome improv family.
Well, I hope to see you all. If anybody met me this way and you come to Omaha, stop by the back line and tell me that you listen to this podcast. So.
Yeah, that's right.
Thank you for listening to Yes But Why Podcast. Check out all of our episodes on yesbutwhypodcast.com or check out all the content on our network, HC Universal, at hcuniversalnetwork.com.